Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
20,000 needless deaths. As you reflect on this passage, think about the big picture that we have studied. David, chosen as a shepherd boy to be the king of Israel, after many years of being a fugitive running from King Saul, he ascends to the throne. He gets himself into great sin. And we have now civil war in Israel. Why? It didn't have to be. As we look at the problems of this world, we need to see there is a deeper picture. We look at this chapter and we see Israel divided, Absalom has his forces, David has his faithful followers, and civil war has come. Why? Sin. The truth is, Israel is in this deplorable condition because of sin. Well, David has fled from Jerusalem. He is now settled in Mahanaim on the east side of the Jordan. Absalom arrives with his forces, and now they are getting poised to enter into battle. David has divided his army into three, and as they are going out, getting ready, David says, I'm going to go. They said, no, you're not going to go. We covered this last week. So, the forces are now moving out to the battlefield. Let us pick up and read our text for tonight, beginning at 2 Samuel 18:4. And the king said unto them, what seemeth you best I will do. And the king stood by the gate side, and all the people came out by hundreds and by thousands. And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. And Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. We're not going to be spending time tonight so much on that last verse 9. We'll get into more of that next week. But I want you to truly stop and think again, big picture. We are seeing the interaction of sinners with sinners and God's intervention. And God truly does intervene in the affairs of mankind. Simple outline for this study tonight, verses 4 and 5, David gives instructions concerning Absalom as his army goes forth. Verses 6 through 8, the battle occurs and 20,000 die. And verse 9, we have the death of Absalom. All right, let's pick up at verse 5. The king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. It's interesting the tone of David's voice, the whole attitude of the command he gives, one of sure confidence, of victory. When you get Absalom, be gentle. He didn't say if. Now, is that just the words of a man trying to be positive as his men are entering combat? Maybe so. But I think David really knew inside, based upon experience, he was a seasoned veteran in war. But he also knew God was with him. God promised him an eternal throne. He sinned greatly, but he also knows that God forgave him. But he gives this command to deal gently with the one who's causing such turmoil in Israel. Quote, David's prudence to all the people and his indulgence to his rebellious son. From his natural affectionate disposition, always a fond father to his children, full of clemency and insomuch that be spared Saul his enemy when his power once and again was in his hand. David was a warrior for sure, but David was also a man of mercy. When Saul was in that cave at En Gedi, he would not raise his hand. When Saul was asleep in the valley and Abishai wanted to kill him, he wouldn't let him. He extends that to his son. He doth not call him my son. Rather, he says the young man. Is David placating the situation? Well, it's his youth. He's just a foolish kid that's got to get his head on straight. No, I don't think so. I think right now he is talking. Yes, he's a young man. He's got a lot to learn. I think David can never, ever get it out of his mind. I have sinned, and Nathan told me this sword will never leave my house. And in that, oh dear God, I don't want to see more problems. We already have the ruined family of Uriah and Bathsheba. We already have my daughter raped by her brother Amnon, who's been murdered by Absalom. Oh, does David grieve as he sees this? It must always be on his conscience. David, a man after God's own heart, is saying, deal kindly with him. Really? 20,000 men are going to die because of this young man's folly. Where do we place the blame as we look at the grand scheme of things in life? Well, it's David's fault. Did you know it's also Absalom's fault? Did you know it's Ahithophel's fault? Where do you start and stop pointing fingers? There finally comes a time we have to say, everybody just start doing right. Not to say that we're not to bring justice. We must have justice. But folks, the real issue is sin, and it has to start on a grassroots level. I want you to step back again, think of the big picture. As we see David and his rebellious son, let's think about some other fathers in the story of 1 and 2 Samuel. How about Eli, 1 Samuel chapter 3? This man is the high priest. 1 Samuel 3:13. God is speaking to Samuel, talking about Eli. If you remember this story, this is where Samuel's a little boy, and in the middle of the night, he hears the voice, Samuel, Samuel. And he finally says, yes, Lord. And the Lord speaks and says to him, for I, God, have told him, Eli, that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. Failure, the man who is the high priest. How about Samuel himself? Let's consider his sons. 1 Samuel 8:1. It came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, the name of the second Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. And his sons walked not in his ways, turned aside after lucre, took bribes, perverted judgment. Kind of a grim picture being painted. How about King Saul? Here's a father for you. Then said Saul to his armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Saul took a sword and fell on it. Saul, if you would have gotten your life straightened out, you wouldn't be doing this. But you were rebellious to the things of God. And of course, we have Ahithophel, a man who was like an oracle of God. 2 Samuel 17:23, when Ahithophel saw his counsel was not followed, he saddled his ass and rose and got him home to his house, to his city, and put his household in order. He hanged himself and died and was buried in the sepulcher of his father. Here in 17 verse 23, we see the terrible condition of a man who was once so godly, and he has fallen into the depths of sin such that he would hang himself. Here we have Absalom in gross rebellion against God and his father. For all practical purposes, he's really in rebellion against the nation. He doesn't care about the people. He's angry at his father. And he doesn't care about these people. And how are the soldiers to be gentle in battle? How would you carry out that command? Absalom's going to probably be a madman when you catch him. And yet David deals gently with his rebellious son as God deals with his rebellious children. Aren't you glad he's merciful? He is all wise and makes no mistakes. Let's look at the battle. 2 Samuel 18:6. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim. This is interesting because if you consider Ephraim, the tribe of Ephraim is really on the other side of Jordan. And they are on the east side of Jordan. They're not in the tribe of Ephraim. It is speculated that this was called the place of Ephraim because so many years ago, 40,000 Ephraimites lost their lives there. Could it be because of the slaughter? Is it named afterward that the person who was used by God to write this, which I personally believe was Samuel, but we're not exactly sure, you say, how could he write it? He's dead. How did Moses write about creation? He wasn't born. Don't worry about that. You know, God can do funny things like that. If you read Judges 12, 5 and 6, look at the very end of verse 6. They took him, slew him at the passages of Jordan, and there fell at that time of the Ephraimites 42,000. Could it be it is named after that? That's what most of the commentators speculate. But we have this wood, in the wood of Ephraim. Look at verse 7. Where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. David's men seasoned in battle. He had the Cherethites. The Cherethites were his bodyguards. They, I would call them today the elite forces. The Pelethites, the messengers. And apparently he had thousands with him because he had to divide them into three groups and they compared him to 10,000 of them. And they went out against Absalom. He put Amasa in charge, not seasoned veterans. And David's men had a great victory. Quote, the wood devoured more than the sword. Behold here David's policy and Absalom's infatuation to fight in so fatal a place as the wood of Ephraim, which had been so fatal to Oreb and Zeb and Gideon's time, where we saw in Judges 12. Why did they fight there? The rout that incurred, running from death, they ran to the wood where they apparently tried to hide themselves. Some fell upon stubs that did beat the breath out of their bodies when they had spent the most of it by their hasty running away. Some for haste plunged themselves into pits and ditches which were in the wood, and which either they saw not, and so their violent flight hurried them to their death unawares. So dreadful a thing it is to provoke the Lord of hosts, who call and can arm all things to destroy us. God used a stationary wood and slew more than were slain with the intent to kill by men. Folks, God is in control. I want you to think about these 20,000 men that have died because of the rebellion, because of David's sin, because of the whole mess. They died needlessly. Ahithophel wanted to take 12,000 and kill David only. Who knows what that battle would have been? But it's a sad thought, 2 Samuel 15:11, as Absalom was assembling his forces, and with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity. They knew not anything. They had no clue what they were getting into. You wonder how many were brought into this whole cesspool without understanding what's happening. And the next thing is, how did I get here? And many of these people, God's people, chosen people, are dying needlessly. Verse 8, for the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. God was fighting for David and his men. The sword of David and his men was not sufficient. God stepped in and intervened. Was it to be merciful to bring it to a faster end? Was David that greatly outnumbered? We don't know. We know this. God stepped in. And he killed more than were killed with the sword. By the forest consuming more than the sword, it's clear to see which side God blessed. Folks, it is not for us to make sure God is on our side. It is for us to make sure we're on God's side. Absalom could raise an army from all Israel, and they died by the wood, or we would say the woods. There is no counsel against the Lord. Again, quote, now they see what it is to take counsel against the Lord and his anointed, and to think of breaking his bands asunder. And they that might see that God fought against them, they are conquered by a few, an army in all probability much inferior in their numbers. By that flight with which they hoped to save themselves, they destroyed themselves. The wood which they thought would give them shelter devoured more than the sword. They probably thought they could hide in the wood. They didn't realize they ran to their very death. The pits, the bogs, the stumps, the thickets were probably the death of multitudes of the dispersed, distracted Israelites. And who wonders, were there animals in the forest also? 20,000 were slain. Consider also in that wood that Absalom died. Verse 9, and Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak. He was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. And he's trapped, hanging by his head and hair. Remember, we studied he had this incredible hair that he made a big deal of once a year. He had it cut. Oh, is he a vain, vain person. Believably, he was very good looking. It's interesting, that forest, sitting there, doesn't move. It became a killing ground to those who were against the Lord's anointed. And you know what it did to the men who supported God's anointed? It was a great blessing because it did the work for them. That which was a blessing to some was a cursing to others. It all depends upon how you stand with God. That woods was a cursing to the people under Absalom. That very wood was a blessing to the men with David. The same wood. God does miraculously deliver people. What is amazing is to think that God Himself showed His providential hand in the death of people. How do we reckon this? Because God is God, and God does what He deems fit, and He is always right. I want you to consider some other places in Scripture where God showed His hand mighty on behalf of His people. How about when the Red Sea destroyed the Egyptian army? Exodus 14:28, "And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one." God showed His hand mighty. I like this one, Exodus 23:28. It's a promise to the children of Israel as you go forth. He says this, "And I, God, will send hornets before thee, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, the Hittite from before thee." He's going to send the hornets before you even get there. I'll have the hornets working for you. How about hailstones? Joshua 10:11. "It came to pass as they fled from before Israel and were in the going down to Bethoron, that the Lord cast down great stones from heaven upon them unto Ezekiel, and they died." Let's read that again. "That the Lord cast down great stones from heaven upon them unto Ezekiel, and they died. And there were more which died from hailstones than they whom the children of Israel slew with the sword." And in Joshua 24:12, we have the fulfillment of the promise in Exodus about the hornets. Now we look back, Joshua 24:12, "And I," past tense, "sent." I did it. I told you I would, and I did it. "I sent the hornet before you, which drave them out before you." Do you understand, if you are going to deal with a problem, you're calling on God, you're doing your best to serve Him, do you understand that it is believable, maybe not in specific, but in general terms, He is sending hornets that you can't even see well before you ever get there? That's the God we serve. He is working before you even have to get to the place of conflict. Serve God, it's worth it all. Of course, here we see there was a great victory for David that day, and yet at the same time, the reality is there was a great loss. David certainly was glad, I'm sure his forces won, but certainly he was sad that 20,000 men died. A bittersweet victory. It should have never been. If David could come up here today, he would say, "Don't do it. Don't do it. Stay faithful to God. Do things His way." Well, there is no happy ending to sin. Here we have 20,000 men that have needlessly died. Families suffered loss. The nation surely suffered loss. And the testimony for God before the nations is deplorable. Is it not amazing God can use any of us? And let's be very thankful for His grace and mercy. Remember, there are battles and wars, but what's deeper behind it? Sin. And we have to look for God's wisdom as we navigate the waters of life in a sin-sick world. I want you to consider again. Verse 6. "So the people went into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was a great slaughter that day, 20,000 men. For the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured." I want you to reflect. God gave us almost nothing about the battle. Right? That's it. If you want to read about the Civil War, the books, this room couldn't contain them. Or World War II or whatever. Did you know God is not so much concerned with the battle than with the spirituality or lack thereof that brought it to pass? We are so consumed many times with the events of the earth. God is not interested in telling us all about, well then, Ittai moved his forces over here, and then that allowed Joab to strike his forces over here, and Abishai was doing this, and God doesn't care. He looks beyond that. This is what we have to do, is look beyond the battle. He tells us, it was scattered all over the face of the country, and the wood devoured more than the sword did. And what do we want to know? I want to know how the wood did that. But did you know it's not important? Otherwise God would have told us. It's more important to know that God did it, not how God did it. If mankind had written this account, he would have considered all the strategies and tactics and all of the little side stories that would make it so interesting. And God says, no, you need to know that I was in it. And it was me that brought the victory. So it is. We must see beyond this world and all of the high profile events. And remember, God's in it. God is in it. And He is working today in your life. That God that we are studying of 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 years ago is just as alive, just as active, and just as powerful in your life today. I find that incredibly exciting. 20,000 needless deaths. Let us remember God does intervene in the affairs of this world. Let us do right. And remember that people are watching us as a testimony for God.
This is Pastor Rod Hollard. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.